Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can, follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 215 of the show. I'm on my own, pretending he's beside me, all alone. That is a reference to the end of close to the end of season one, possibly the penultimate episode of season one of Dawson's Creek, where Joey enters a talent show to make money because her family is in danger of losing the restaurant. Their family, because her dad is a drug dealer and he was in jail, and her mom died of cancer, and she lives with her older sister and her black husband, and Joey's like down on her luck and she wants to earn a little more money, and she enters this pageant, and she reluctantly enters the pageant because she's pretty much a tomboy, and she enters this pageant, and she's got a pretty good, I wouldn't say it's the greatest voice, but I'm a Katie Holmes, Joey Potter fan, so I was in love with Katie Holmes. Whatever she did was dope to me. But that is the moment when she sings it at the talent show that Dawson, who's there to record it, he falls in love with Joey. He's there because I think Jen is in the talent show too. And he was dating Jen, or they broken up, and like an on again, off again thing, or whatever. And Dawson was there because he was there, and he sees Joey singing this song, and that's when he realized that he was in love with her. And Joey was like, "Nah, nigga, you can't be all in love with me because I'm all gussied up. Where was you at when I'm, kicking it with you in your bed, like on the friend tip, and I'm wearing these J. Crew sweaters? But now I'm all like, I got my gown on, and now you trying to holler." And so there was a little, rift between the two of them. But then they eventually got together towards the end, and then they broke up, and Joey hooked up with the gay guy, Jack. And then she pretty much hooked up with a lot of dudes until she ended up being with Pacey. And then she ended up marrying Pacey by the time the series was over. Anyway, I'm by myself doing this episode, flying solo. My apologies in advance. I had two postponements, and I have one episode in the can that I'm releasing especially on next week. So be on the lookout for that. So I'm sitting here in my apartment. I'm in my apartment recording this thing. I just found out on SportsCenter that The Six with Jemele Hill and Michael Smith, that Kevin Durant has like a calf injury, and he's going to be out for, maybe he's out the next game. He's out the next game, and they don't know when he's coming back. I hate this, man. I hate when guys get hurt at any time, but especially in the playoffs, because you want to see everybody at full strength. But even that's hard because they're playing all the time. All these guys are probably dinged up to a certain degree. And people get mad when they say, "Oh, we're going to rest the players." Guys are probably playing too many games, and they've been talked. Studies have been shown that that all as time advances and technology improves, you can start to see how things are, and these guys are fucking tired. Anybody could tell LeBron's tired. He plays all year round. All these. I'm just a LeBron fan, but all these guys are tired, and there's a lot of wear and tear on these dudes. They're running and jumping and cutting and all over the place for a few hours a night. So I hate that he's hurt. Yesterday, my dad and I were talking. I noticed something like, maybe he's been doing it throughout the whole season, but like he's like I don't know. Back in the day, we used to call it from the D.C. Maryland D.C. area. We used to call it gritting. Like, you gritting on me, man? You gritting on me? It's almost like you mean mugging. After he makes like a shot, he's like mean mugging and shit. I don't remember him doing that that much in OKC, but it just seems whatever it is he's doing now, it seems like it's heightened. And it's like, dude, if you had that tenacity and anger, you probably would have won last year and you wouldn't have to go to Golden State. I'm all for this guy taking control of his career and everything like that. I'm not mad at him. I don't hold no grudges. He's a PG County man, you know, much love for him and whatnot. You know what I'm saying, young? But he's just like really doing it a lot. He's like making a screw face after he makes a shot that he makes so easily. It was like, what was it, last night or whenever it was, one of the games. They've only played one game, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, they only played one game. This guy was just playing defense. Like, he was on him. And Kevin Durant just, like, pulled up and shot it like it was nothing. He's just that good. He's so good. So he's just, like, kind of mean mugging. I was like, dude, if you'd have played like that in OKC, you'd have at least one ring. You'd have beat Golden State last year, and you'd have beat the Cavs. As much as I hate to admit that, they probably would have beat the Cavs. So it sucks that he's hurt. I hate that he's hurt. I just want to see them at full strength, and we'll see what happens, man. The playoffs, and I think this is probably one of my favorite times of the year as it applies to sports. I'm definitely excited about that. I didn't watch that much basketball because I was, again, binging on Horizon Zero Dawn. I was talking to the homie comedian Alip Patel, friend of the podcast, and we were talking, and he told me, I think I was on level 26 at the time, and he had said that he was on level 30, and he plays it on difficult, and I was like, I was jealous of him, and I was just like, whatever, dude. But I'm further along in the story, but you still need to level up as much as possible when you fight these bad guys. And so I was playing a lot on Saturday and Sunday. And before I had two shows, I will get into that a little bit, but I was like, man. And then I found out that there's these power cells that you have to collect throughout your journey in the game. And they're scattered all over the place in these secret locations. And a couple of them I had, but then I found out that you could get this shield weaver outfit that leaves you impervious to damage. It's like an invincibility suit where for an extended period of time, the attacks from all the enemies in the game can't hurt you. And if you get hit enough times, like your suit will flash red and then you have to get the fuck out of the way so you don't get hit. So I was on a quest to find that, and it was bothering me all day. That Sunday I played for a long time and I was trying to figure out where the last location was on the map. I looked it up and I couldn't find it. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I couldn't find it. And I was like, let me just take some time away. And I had an audition for a show, I had an audition for a cable network show. That's all I'm going to say. And I was thinking about the fucking video game. There's only two lines on the show, but it was like, now I feel like what I'm getting called in for are like service people, like worker guys. I don't have a problem with that shit, but I played an exterminator in a movie I shot. I played a cop in another one, and I auditioned for a water delivery guy the first time I auditioned for that show, and then I got auditioned for a cable tech guy, and the description for the cable guy was like, we need to see all ethnicities, average looking man to play a Midwestern cable guy. So that's what I auditioned for, and if I got it, I would be really excited to get it, and it would be in a scene with a really good and talented actor. So it would be dope as fuck to get it. But I noticed that's kind of what I'm getting called in for, and I'm not mad at it at all. That'd be like the closest thing I could be to my dad to a certain degree, like a worker, like a man's man type of guy. So that was pretty dope. So hopefully I get it. So I was thinking about, like, I wanted to book the audition, book the part on the show or whatever. But I was thinking about it in the back of my mind, like I was at work thinking about it. I was like, I gotta find that power cell. I gotta find it. I need to find it. And so I came home yesterday. I was gonna record an episode, and I was like, I gotta find this power cell. And I was like, I'm just gonna find this last power cell. I'm gonna get this suit, and I'm gonna just cut the fucking thing off. And I got the power cell, and I got the suit, and I was like, I gotta try the suit out. I gotta fight these fucking machines and see how if it's really legit. And my God, it was really legit. So I leveled up to like level 35, and I think I started playing at like 5:30-ish, and it was like 11 when I was done. I don't know if I'm really ashamed by that. I was having a good time, you know? Like, part of me wants to feel like, oh, I didn't do. No, fuck that. It's a game, and I played it. The fucking thing costs close to $70, and it's amazing. I raved about this last week, but I think it's the best game. It's the second best game. It's the best game I've played since The Last of Us. It's probably gonna have to be up there, with like one of the best games I ever played in my life. I haven't ranked my video games yet. I would really have to sit down and do that and think about what that would be. Because would you put it in like your classic categories of like when you were a kid, like Nintendo, Atari? Or would you just say like you have a separate list and then you have like your modern day video games? So I don't know. I would have to think about that. I'd have to think about that long and hard. But I just... And it's nothing like, oh my God, that Shill Weaver suit is like, it's the shit. And it was just Shill Weaver armor, basic. That's what it's called. Shill Weaver armor. And I tell you, it's nothing like a new outfit to make my strong female video game character even stronger. Because she was shining. Like if you look up Horizon Zero Dawn on YouTube and you look up Shield Weaver armor, you'll see that the armor, it's like shine. Oh my God, it's dope as fuck. And it gave me so much confidence. Like new outfits can give you confidence, you know? I think it does. Like a haircut, I can only speak for black dudes, but I think, no, fuck, if you get a haircut and you get some decent clothes on, you feel better about yourself. I just initially led with the black man thing because I remember it was a scene on the first Barbershop where I think they cut a poor guy's hair, like a guy that he got a haircut and he ran out on his ticket before he was supposed to pay. And he did that because he didn't have any money and he had a job interview. And then I think he paid him back at the end. He paid whoever it was back at the end. I think that's how it went. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that's what happened. And he got the job and then he paid either Ice Cube or so. Anyway, but it did make me feel, I was like, yes, it gave me more confidence and I don't have to like tread lightly as much. I was like, oh, because it has a sensor, like the machine can, if it senses you, it gives you like a little, it gives you a question mark, like, what's that? Like, what's going on? Metal Gear used to do that when you had to be in stealth mode. Like they'd have a soldier say, huh? What was that? Oh, and then they see you and they start shooting you. But it's funny too when all the bad guys start coming after you. You just hit them with your staff, and like you get a staff, you get a new like a striking staff that you. It's so fucking good. I'm sorry. So I binged on that. Where was I? So I binged on the game. Sorry, the podcast is late. I hope everybody had a I hope everybody had a good Easter. I'm excited about the playoffs. My weekend was pretty neat. Alongside of binging on Horizon Zero Dawn again, I had two shows at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, right down the street. And I was hosting for JJ Ramirez and Mike Gaffney. And it was a good time, man. Like, the first show was, I felt like, oh my God, they hated me. And the owners were there. The owners didn't hate me, but like the crowd, it was just really, it was kind of small. And the crowd was just like, oh, even stuff that, like, I guess I was working pretty clean or whatever, and just doing like normal bits that have worked for like a long time. And, you know, and like they were like, oh, and they were like, they weren't bad, like evil, like mean or dirty. They were just like, oh my God, what is this? And I was like, you guys fucking hate me. So I was happy to get off stage. And then I had to do five in between. And I was like, oh my God. And the show was all right. And then I just like was like, oh God, how am I going to get him back? And so Saturday, it was a bigger crowd. And they were a hot crowd. And that show ended up being really good. And I kind of lost him on my 5 minutes back with bringing up Black Lives Matter. but overall it was fine, and I had a really good salad at the restaurant in the hotel. Bananas is in the Holiday Inn, there's a club in the Holiday Inn in Hasbrook Heights or whatever, and they have a restaurant called Gabriel's, and they have I was probably one of the best salads I've ever had in my life. It was a really good salad. One of the best salads I've had in my life was in New York City in the Village near NYU. And the place closed down because of, I think it had health violations. But it was so good. It was like a really good salad. It was like one of those, the first time I had a salad at a deli, and it was in a bowl. Like it was in like a container, and it was a shit. Like, the days that I would like not eat from home, not like bring in lunch from home, I would get a salad from that spot, and it was just really good. It was really on point. And they closed down. But this salad, grilled chicken salad, fantastic. So I talked about the playoffs a little bit. I guess I'm going to talk about some music, some movies, and we'll just get the hell out of here. Also, on Sunday, I went to a concert. I went to go see Chaz Bundick and the Mattson 2 at the Bowery Ballroom in New York City. It's in Chinatown off Delancey Street. And I'd been there a couple times, I think, one to see Rachel Yamagata a few years ago. And then I think one last year or a year and a half ago, I went to, like 2015 probably, I went to go see this artist named Sohn, who is from the UK. He's kind of like electronic singer, piano player guy. So Chaz Bundick and the Mattson 2. Big Chaz Bundick is the front man for Toro y Moi. And you've heard me rave about this guy ever since I started this podcast. One of my favorite artists. And I found out about the show because I was at work, and I just happened to look at my email on my phone, and Ticketfly sent me this thing that said, oh, Chaz Bundick and the Mattson 2 are going to be at the Bowery. And I was like, oh man, I should go, but it's on a Sunday and I have to work the next day. And the show's at 9:00. It's a school night. I had every reason to not go. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I bought the ticket. It was $20 with the service charges. It was 28, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm just getting the ticket digitally, or I could have gotten a will call. And when you make the choice to do that, either get a digital ticket or will call, it says $0, I believe, but then they still charge you $7 or $8 more. So that tickets are a big racket. And Sunday got to the time I was binging on Horizon. I was like, oh, I got to go to this show. I was like, why am I like being a Debbie Downer about going to see one of my favorite artists in concert? One is probably because like driving, driving on Sundays in the city, driving from New Jersey to Manhattan, crossing the GWB, George Washington Bridge. If you live in the tri-state area, you know it's usually a shit show on Sundays. And I was like, I got to do that. I don't really want to. It's going to making all these stupid noises. But it took me, it didn't take that long. It was like 45 minutes to get to Lower East Side area, Chinatown. And on my way, I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to the album. The album's 35 minutes long. And this was the first time, like my second listen, and I actually got to like kind of vibe out to it while I was driving. And I was like, okay, I was getting more and more excited about the show. And I was vibing out to the album. I was like, damn, this is really good. And I told you a couple weeks ago, I think I did. Yeah, it just seemed like it was like a 35-minute jam session. Like Chaz sung a few times, but for the most part, it was just instrumental. And the Mattson 2 are this band, this jazz duo, these two brothers, and they are from California, San Diego, I believe. And they met Chaz, and they put this album out on Chaz's label, Company Records. And I was like, man, they fucking rocked out. Like I put their opening number, like I guess Instagram allows you to do a minute of video. So I just put that minute of the video, like they just fucking rocked out, and it was amazing. Like, so one of the Mattson twins plays lead guitar, and the other brother plays drums, and Chaz played the keys, and he played the MPC, and he played guitar. If it wasn't guitar, that was bass. But either way, like they just jammed for like an hour straight, and it was fantastic. I was just so glad that I got there, that I went. And I forgot to tell you, like, I'm in my old man mode where the doors open at 8, so I got there before 8. And the Bowery Ballroom, it's a cool venue. It's like seats, it's 500 capacity. And they have a balcony area where they have chairs and you can sit down and whatnot. So I got there a little before 8, and I'm sitting downstairs. They got this lounge area where everybody's hanging out before the show, and they got a bar. And I just stood beside the door where the entrance to the club was. So it was downstairs, and you open up the door and you go upstairs. And when the security guy opened up the door, I went straight upstairs and went all the way to the balcony, found a seat, and just sat there the whole time and just chilled. And it was fucking great. And I had my shoes on, my sneakers. I don't care. I had my New Balance on, and I was chilling. I saw a younger guy than me had these Nikes that I had that I thought that, nah, I guess they, I don't know that they were super exclusive, but he had them. So I felt cool because I'm an older dude, and I was like, I have those shoes. I have that color. And anyway, that was just a random thing, but it was just such a great time. And it started off my week really dope. But it ended my weekend, like ending of a good way to end the weekend and start the work week. And I didn't really care that I was a little tired on Monday. So I recommend, like, it only enhanced my love of the album seeing them live. So Chaz Bundick meets the Mattson 2. The name of the album is Star Stuff. And it's really good. Like, if you like that type of music or you want to give it a try, check it out. And then check out Toro y Moi, check out Chaz's side projects. I'm a really big fan. He's up there with somebody that I want to have on the podcast one day. So yeah, I had a blast. Speaking of music, Kendrick Lamar, you guys, how about Kendrick Lamar's new album, Damn? I really like it. I think it's good. What I'm trying to figure out now, is this his third or fourth proper album? Because a lot of people are saying that, some people are saying it's wait a minute. Whoa. Oh, okay, I think I see what I did here. Some people are saying it's his fourth. Some people say that Overly Dedicated was the first album, but Wikipedia, I mean, we don't always agree. We're always, okay, I thought it was Section 80. I thought Section 80 was the first album, the first studio slash proper album, because it was a complete, fully realized product. Like, it was very cinematic. Most of his work, when it comes to him like really focusing in on something, it plays as being very cinematic. So I thought you had Section 80 in 2011 being the first proper, Good Kid, Mad City being the second, To Pimp a Butterfly being third, and then the new album Damn being the fourth. I thought it would work like that. Some people were saying, I asked people on Facebook, I thought I should, you know, you'd think I'd have it queued up. I asked people what they thought about it on Facebook as far as it's concerned. Okay, do you consider Section 80 to be Kendrick's first album? No, one of my buddies said. Shout out to Norvin. Shout out to Tron from rapper guy Tron, who's been on the show. Damn, like episode 30 something. Jeez. So no, it's a mixtape. Some people said yes, there just wasn't a physical copy. There was a physical copy. It was just limited edition. Somebody said Overly Dedicated. Somebody said yes, and his best. And then somebody said other guy is right. Another guy that needs to be on the show that I need to reach out to. And one of my best friends from elementary school was like, no. And I was like, why? He said, because he had other mixes that came out before that one. Section 80 was a mix to introduce him to the masses. Overly Dedicated would be his first album. Real Kendrick fans would know that. Section 80 would be his second. And then I wrote back, shots fired. And he says, as far as being on a label, just keeping it 100. Okay. So, and then the homie Phenom Black said that OD was. So I kind of tend to side with him, because he, like, Phenom Black is the guy. Phenom Black is a friend of the pod. And so I said, okay, so Overly Dedicated, Section 80, Good Kid, Mad City, To Pimp a Butterfly, and Damn. And then he even said the Heart Records, the four of them, make an EP. Okay, so if we go with Overly Dedicated being the first, then he's kind of like 5 for 5. Five really dope albums. And that type of output, he's pretty prolific when it comes to releasing stuff. And it just seems like he never really missed. It took me a while. It took me a minute to really get into him. But I think I was talking to someone on a future episode that I felt like when Kendrick first came out, when I first heard of him, it was a record, Michael Jordan, where he says, I'm too much for these niggas and three much for these hoes. Michael Jordan, bitch. And I was like, wow, this guy, he's going hard. Like, I fuck with that. And that was like seven or eight years ago. Something around that time. And I'm like, okay, all right. And then he had this record, Cut You Off, that was on Overly Dedicated. And I really liked that one. Like, it was like a really, it was like a meditation on family and friends. I was like, man, this is really fucking good. And so I was like, he had that, like, that dichotomy of like, yeah, I'm the illest nigga, I'm better than everybody, I'm Michael Jordan, bitch. And then I'm like, talking about my family, I'm gonna have to cut you off. You're being really negative, and you're being this way and that way. So I was like, okay, I like this guy. And then it just kind of, he settled in for me. And then around 2012, Section 80, 2011, I was like, yeah, Section 80 is like, this guy's the real deal. And then he just kept going. And I thought Good Kid, Mad City was really good. I felt like he had some, it was very, I think I reviewed it with the Where's My 40 Acres crew. I know Brandon and I did, we did Brandon / Phenom Black. We did, two Blue albums, and we did Good Kid, Mad City at one point. We did Section 80, and then we did, I felt like some cold, Holden Caulfield vibes to it. This is very Salinger-esque to a degree. It was just really good. And then To Pimp a Butterfly was like, it was also very good. I think it's a classic, but it's like, his music is kind of, and it can be dense. He's like, I was texting a buddy of mine and I was saying, like, it's almost like he's a more accessible Pharoah Monch. Like Pharoah Monch, you know, he's incredible. You know, he's dope. Sometimes it's a little too dense. Sometimes you may have to be in a mood to listen to him and take in everything that he's putting down to really like think about what you're listening to and the meaning and everything. And it's not just like some throwaway shit where, as a cohesive project, To Pimp a Butterfly is that. And then it's also, and he's got a couple jams that are like, okay, yeah, you could, it, All Right is a good jam. I Love Myself, you know, they play that in the trailer for The Intern, the Anne Hathaway, De Niro flick. So it's like, okay. And then with Damn, it seemed to be like, I think it's very good. And it seems to be even more accessible than some of the other projects where it's like those songs can be easily extracted and kind of stand on their, they can be extracted a little easier than some of the past records. And it's just like, it's just a little, it's something for everybody. Like his hooks are on point. The bars are there. It just seems like he's just getting better. Cause I think when I think about Kendrick Lamar when I think of him as an artist, I think of him really putting out quality albums where it's not about the hits, and he does have hits, but the concern doesn't seem to be with making hit records. It's making stuff that, you know, sounds good, but at the same time it's like he's got the meat and potatoes along with the vegetables, and you feel you come away being satiated. I look at Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips, his Facebook feed. He's kind of got like a new favorite song every day, and I could totally see that new favorite song from the album. And they just put out the DNA video that has a cameo from Don Cheadle. And yeah, it's just, I think it's really fucking good. And it's always good to hear, like, to get people digesting it and coming up with their theories on rap genius. Nerds do make shit a lot of fun, though, especially when it comes to this, when it comes to this music, and it comes to them breaking down text. I think it's fucking cool, and I really dig it, man. Especially on a project that's has a lot of universal praise, or just something that's heavily anticipated, or an artist that comes out with something and it's an event. And I think even with the media being cold, a lot colder than it used to be, as opposed to going into the brick and mortar stores and buying the album and smelling it, you know how I am about that shit. That is something like social media, especially Twitter, brings back that a little bit of that warmth, actually a lot of it. And when it comes to people dissecting it, some people, I mean, and he's may not be everybody's cup of tea, but I was just telling somebody about it, and it's kind of scary how good he's getting. It's like, it's even, he's just, I just see the growth And I just, it's just a tighter, it just seems like Damn is an even tighter project. If you could even say, and that's not even, I can't even say that. That's really, I'm probably speaking out of turn even saying that. Because To Pimp a Butterfly, like, I got to go back and listen to To Pimp a Butterfly again, but it's just, it's just a really good record. It's really, really fucking good, man. The last song, Duckworth, has three beats from Ninth Wonder. So I'm glad Ninth Wonder is getting some more love and exposure, even though he's well respected in the game. But it's cool that he's on. I know he's done Destiny's Child stuff and a lot of other people, but I'm glad people are paying attention to what he's doing. Like, the spotlight is on him to be on that last record. And for Ninth Wonder, formerly of Little Brother, one of my favorite, probably the best, one of the best hip hop groups this side of the new millennium, or probably one of my favorite hip hop groups of all time. I would say Tribe, Little Brother, Outkast, De La, The Roots, you know. Yeah, it's just really good. That Duckworth record kind of reminds me of that Andre 3000 song. I think it's like the life of Benjamin Andre. But let me see, is that the name of it? I'm typing it in YouTube with one finger. Benjamin. Yeah, Life of Benjamin Andre. It is. A life in the day of Andre Benjamin. Yeah. But it wasn't as but with Duckworth, Kendrick goes back to like his dad's origin story. It's really it's just so good. It's just really good. I don't know, people are doing their, I retweeted a couple of it was a video of these young guys talking about how Kendrick fans praise the new album, like where they do quotes from it and the guys are like catching the spirit and all that stuff. It's really funny, and it's really the turnaround. Like, the album hadn't been out. The album's been out, 4 days? And day two, I saw that video. It's so easy to do. People do that shit. It's great. I'm just happy. It makes me feel good. There's so much really good music out there now that it's just like fun. It's what a time to be alive. I mean, Little Dragon dropped their new album, Season High, which I think is really good. If you're a Little Dragon fan, that came out. Talib Kweli and Styles P have an album out called The Seven. Yeah, it's called The Seven. John Mayer came out. I haven't heard that yet, but I will listen to it. But that's just a couple to name a few. But yeah, I'm a Kendrick. And Kendrick's got to be, I think you got to consider him to be one of the greats now. That's if we go by what folks are saying by Overly Dedicated being an album. Let's say we do that. So we say it starts from Overly Dedicated, and we take out the Kendrick Lamar EP and when he was KDOT. We take all that out. We know that's his stuff, but if we just focus on those five to be albums. Overly Dedicated, there's no narrative in that, but there is biographical shit in there that relates to, that bleeds into Section 80 and definitely Good Kid, Mad City. But I mean, you think of the records on that are just fucking really good records that still come up in my playlist, like when I have my hip hop mix. So not just because I like it, that means it's good. But I noticed, like, he's definitely, it's just a really tight project. And it's definitely, you don't really have to be in a, you know, really have to be in a mood, like a real intense mood to listen to it. He's got some bangers. It's just something for everybody, for all types of fans. So I mean, if you're not listening to, and I don't want to be that guy. Like, if you don't, he's not for everybody. What I do want to see is his Coachella set, but I don't know if they have. I didn't even know he was going to be at Coachella. I think I woke up and looked at my phone and be like, yeah, what Kendrick is doing here in this piece on Twitter, people were saying, I was like, oh shit, I guess I missed his Coachella set, but it was Sunday night. I think I had just gotten home. I got home at like midnight and I just went straight to sleep. So whatever. What else? We talked music. Let's do a movie. I did not go to the theater again this week, last week. There's just nothing I really want to see. I'm doing some shows at Levy. I'm hosting for Greg Barrett this weekend, Thursday through Sunday. So I'm going to be there working. And maybe I'll kill time by seeing Fast 8 or something. I really don't want to see Fast. I'm not like, that's the last thing I ever want to do, but it's not on my, I'm not pressed to see it. What I'm really excited about is next week, this movie Slight comes out, and then The Circle, which I'm really excited about. So I might do, I might double feature it after work that next week. So that's what I'm excited about. And then Guardians of the Galaxy comes out, the second one, part two. And then I think I'm going to do a summer movie preview with JL Covan. Summer officially starts when the first Marvel movie comes out. When the first Marvel movie comes out in May or April, that's when it's time to get the summer going. So that's that. But I did watch this movie, Kubo and the Two Strings. I heard a lot about it. It's a Oscar-nominated flick. And my goodness, I thought I had... This is really starting to piss me off. I thought that I had it queued up. It's an animated film. And I was just kind of on Twitter on Sunday. And I was like, oh, it's on Netflix. And IndieWire had a little piece about it. It said, why you should be watching Kubo and the Two Strings. And I was like, oh, shit. I guess I'll watch this. And it's 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. And here's the blurb. Young Kubo's peaceful existence comes crashing down when he accidentally summons a vengeful spirit from the past. Now on the run, Kubo joins forces with Monkey and Beetle to unlock a secret legacy. Armed with a magical instrument, Kubo must battle the Moon King and other gods and monsters to save his family and solve the mystery of his fallen father, the greatest samurai warrior the world has ever known. This is really good. One of my things is I don't know why cartoon animated films have to start off with somebody dying and why they have to be so sad. I tweeted something like that. I said, why can't they just be like, Nicholas Sparks movies and like ease you into the sad shit that's going to happen. I used to do a bit about Nicholas Sparks movies. If you Google Chris Lambert geeks out on movies or something like that. Chris Lambert geeks out. What is it? Chris Lambert. Chris Lambert. This is compelling. I think if you just do geeking out. I did a show called Geeking Out like 4 years ago. And I did a set all about movies. Yeah, if you Google Chris Lambert geeking out, it'll come up. It's like a 13-minute set where I'm talking about movies and stuff from like 3 years ago. It's funny. it's funny, but I have a bit where I talk about Nicholas Sparks being the killer of just look at the bit. It was really good. It was well done, emotionally compelling. I liked it. I'm not the biggest animated movie fan, but if it's good, it's good. I'm just not drawn to them off the rip, but it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a good story. Like, really, it's actually really fucking good. It makes you think about your family and shit like that, and legacy, and all that jazz. What else? What am I doing here? How much time have I done? I've given you 45, you guys. TV stuff. I'm into Better Call Saul. I got to watch the second episode. I want to watch that. I really like this show Trial and Error on NBC, which is really funny. It's a quirky. It's like Parks and Rec adjacent, and The Office adjacent, with John Lithgow as the lead. Sherry Shepherd's in it. Nicholas D'Agostino, Jemma Mays. So it's good. It's a funny cast. It's silly. I think the finale comes on tonight, but that's really good. Yeah. So I'm gonna be, as I get more comedy dates, I'll let you know. I'm at Levity Live this weekend. I'm doing a fun gig in the city in May. It's all on the calendar, chrislambert.com. What else? Last week I was talking about Shia LaBeouf and Chris Brown. I think it's pretty much like Jemele Hill had a tweet about Chris Brown. She had shared an article about him stalking his ex-girlfriend Carucci, who's like a model, some hot, let's see, she's a model and actress, and she used to date Chris Brown. They got a kid together, and she's dating some guy now named Quavo, and Chris Brown was mad and he's kind of like stalking her. And I just looked at the thread. I think Chris Brown, like, it's mixed. Like, people, a lot of people despise him and don't want him to get off on, you know, some people are thinking that they're letting him slide on stuff. Chris Brown allegedly livid that Carucci is dating Quavo. This is from the Global Grind. Jemele Hill writes, she quotes, "I wish we'd stop treating his behavior like it's A, normal, or B, cute. He's an abuser. He's stalking this woman. Say what it is." So that was like a day or two after I had pose a question, are people giving him a break? Some people have said, okay, I'm just reading the comments of some of these people replying to her tweet. Some people are saying, amen, the power of the cat. Obviously, it's supposed to be pussy. Somebody says, scary part, I don't think he even loves her that way more. I don't, what the fuck? It's about access, jealousy, and resentment. I get that part. I didn't know what the first part is. I don't see the big deal about her. Chris need to look around. It's some women way better than her. Somebody need to whip that boy's ass. Jemele Hill says, it's about the fact that he's a psychopath. We need to stop using cute code words to absolve him. He beats and threatens women. Yeah, so he does. Entitlement control. Yeah, so it's kind of like some mixed reviews. Yeah. I mean, no abuse. Abuse is not about sex. He is the second generation of a vicious cycle. So I don't think people aren't giving him slack. So I think maybe they are hard on most rational people are hard on Chris Brown. Shia LaBeouf is like, I mean, they're both kind of brats and they're both talented. And it's like, do we separate the talent from the man? From the actual person. Like Shia LaBeouf, like he couldn't get French fries, so he cursed the guy out and he was drunk and the guy was gonna hit him with the vodka bottle. I don't know, man. I think they just need to get help. Cause it just doesn't look like, there was some video that Chris Brown did. He was talking about something and he just didn't look good. He just didn't look like he was on something. And you just feel bad for these dudes. And what else? 13 Reasons Why. I watched that show. There's some one of my friends on Twitter was like, she was in Facebook, we were talking about it, and she kind of made me reconsider. But I don't think some people like take. I wasn't looking at the show. I just suspended my disbelief and tried to just be invested in the narrative, which is the same thing like Pretty Little Liars, even though like, which is their last episode is premiering, their last season, the last part of the season is premiering tonight. And shout out to Chelsea White and Sue Funk from the Cabernet and A podcast. I just have suspension of disbelief. When I live tweeted Pretty Little Liars, I'll just say like, oh, I'll joke about their parents not being around and who's watching these people, who's watching these kids. But I guess 13 Reasons Why some people really went in on it. Like the main character. I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago where I just didn't like how some of the black actors were portrayed. Like all the kids on that show, for the most part, I hated. I just thought they were assholes, except the lead kid. I mean, he's just one of those kids. Like I can relate to that guy. Like you like this girl, you probably should be making more moves. Well, I don't want to spoil. I'm not gonna spoil anything. But I would say, I don't know. Like there's some people that have mixed reviews about it. There's some people that there's a lot of people that like it. People that I wouldn't expect to even watch the show. Not only are they watching the show, they're liking it, and I'm going to support Selena Gomez. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to support her regardless, you know? But, I mean, as long as she doesn't do stupid shit. But, you know, I'm a fan of Selena. I mean, you know. But I don't know. I just think people have, like, you kind of have to know that it's a, man, if I was this, then I would have blah, blah, blah. But it's like, it's just a TV show. And I don't know how Pretty Little Liars isn't grounded in reality. I mean, some of it to a certain degree. Yeah. And then, but I think 13 Reasons Why is like a hyper reality, even though I just found out today that some kid, oh, where was it? Oh, I don't remember where it was, where it happened, but there was some kid that there was this girl that he was either dating, he was like 13 years old. Somebody played a trick on this kid and said this girl committed suicide. And then he found out about that. It was a prank, and he took the prank as it being real, and then he killed himself. And now they're trying to bring up charges on the, I mean, it's like that's fucking brutal. So I don't even know how much like of a heightened reality that is, but there's been a couple shows about and like movies about bullying and stuff like that. There's been a documentary, about bullying and stuff like that. So I don't know. My friend did make me question. I'm like, yeah, I mean, we're kind of going back. We weren't really arguing about it. We're just like, I was like, yo, you have good points. And then she was retweeting people that were talking shit about the show that made it funny. Cause like when I was on like a couple of weeks, I was like, you know, it's like serious. And there's these moments. But what I did like about the show was that they didn't really hold any punches. They didn't back away from these issues where sometimes people kind of tread lightly on the subject matter. So I was like, okay, I like that they're doing that and kids need to see this so that maybe they won't go through it. So I like that aspect of it. And there was a couple scenes that made me feel like, oh shit, like that was, you know, but then we were trying to rationalize with why would this girl, you know, that the girl kills herself. That's the premise of the show. That's what it's about. So that's not spoiling anything, but you look at her life around what she's killing herself for. It's like, yeah, you know, these people are assholes, but your mom and dad like actually give a shit about you. And some of the kids that didn't kill themselves, like their parents, but it's, you know, whatever. I think that's just like a part of the writing and the narrative that they were dealing with. And the girls finale, so we're like two days, we got 2 days distance from the girls finale. If you didn't like the girls finality, if you didn't like the girls finale, blame Odell Beckham Jr. And I think that, if you understand that, then you know why it's Odell Beckham Jr.'s fault. All right, everybody. That's the end of the show. That's the end of episode 215. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Peace.